To resolve the apparent contradictions, he developed a system of classification, associating different teachings with different audiences in different periods in the Buddha's life. So he was saying, essentially, that the Buddha taught one set of teachings to this group who were there with him at a certain phase in his life, and then he moved on to other teachings. And then the question came up, of course, which was the best? What was the final teaching that really represented the teaching of the Buddha and could be used to interpret all of the rest? Jur-i thought that he found the most definitive and inclusive doctrine in all the Buddha's teaching in the text that we have already looked at that's called the Lotus Sutra. Now, you remember that this is the sutra that gave us that classic parable of the burning house. It showed how the Mahayana teaching was, as it were, the final teaching of the Buddha, presented to his disciples after they had been taught in a skillful way to enter the Buddhist path by pursuing other vehicles. The story was that a father saw a bunch of his children in a burning house, and he tried to get the kids out, and they refused to come, so he offered them a series of different so-called vehicles, carts, that they could play with when they came out of the house. And when they got out of the house, he didn't actually give them a whole bunch of different vehicles. He gave them only one vehicle, which is the vehicle of the Mahayana, the great vehicle. That was understood in this text as being the definitive teaching of the Buddha, and it was the one that Jur-i used to interpret all of the other teachings that were present in this great U-Haul load of texts that had been dumped in his backyard in China. Now, Jur-i developed a particular conceptual approach to the doctrine of emptiness that we haven't seen before, at least in quite this way. It's really an interesting one, and it had a tremendous impact on the rest of East Asian civilization. He said that emptiness was to be expressed in the perfect harmony of three levels of truth. I'll tell you what these three levels are. The first one is really the truth of emptiness, that all phenomena, all dharmas, are empty of any intrinsic identity. It's a classic statement of the doctrine of emptiness in the form that we've seen before in our discussion of Indian Buddhism. The second truth is that all phenomena exist dependently. This is called the temporary truth. And then there is the third truth that's called the truth of the mean, that's the truth that all phenomena are both empty and dependent simultaneously. So what he's done here, we think back to the discussion we've had of Buddhist philosophy earlier, is to take the ultimate truth and the conventional truth, discuss them separately. In this case, he's talked about ultimate truth first and then conventional truth, and then insist that there is a final truth, the truth of the mean or the truth of the middle way, that involves the mapping of one of these truths onto another. So what he often does then in his own teaching is to start you out with some kind of a statement of ultimate reality, some statement of emptiness, and then there's some discussion of conventional experience. And then what he does is to try to map the conventional experience and the ultimate experience together into the experience of the mean. This is an abstract concept, and it's hard really to imagine exactly what the influence of this is going to be, but it had tremendous effect aesthetically on the way the Chinese and the Japanese expressed Buddhist insight, especially in their verse. I'll say something more about that in a minute. Jur-i also developed a doctrine of 3,000 worlds imminent in an instant of thought. This idea, too, you can imagine is coming from the Indian tradition. It's not that far removed from some of the things that we saw in the Indian sutras. But how Taoist it feels, you know, to say that what you've got here is all of the cosmos present right now in a single moment of thought. You can see the movement of Jur-i's mind. It's very down to earth. It's very pragmatic, and it brings the abstractions of Buddhist philosophy right down into a single moment of experience. And that, too, of course, had tremendous aesthetic impact in Chinese Buddhist literature. I'll say more about that, too, when we talk about the literary expression of these ideals. Now, there's a second Buddhist school that also is worth talking about. when we catalog for ourselves the philosophical schools of Buddhism in China. It's called the Huayan, or the Flower Garland School. It was founded by a figure named Fatsang, who lived from 643 to 712. You can see his dates also correspond to the dates of the Tang Dynasty.